Imagine On The Air Performance 592. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today and only today by my temporary co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, folks, during the pandemic, we are virtual and homegrown. Stick with us. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. It is Wednesday, November 25th, 2020, the day before Turkey Day. Gobble, 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 gobble. On the show today, we have Austin Playhouse talking about their dual Dickens productions. And later we'll be talking to Graham Reynolds and Texas Performing Arts under the Big Top. Stay with us after this song. Well, now, I know you're a big, big, big fan of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
I do love the Hedwig.
She like to call him...
one of my favorite East German songstresses.
You like to call her Hedwig.
Hedwig, yes. It's an inside joke, the Hedwig. Well, but yes, I do love it.
We love ourselves some Hedwig, and we know that you are a big fan. You've seen everything. But did you see that they were in the news this week?
They were in the news for a few times, actually, in the last week.
Well, it's really just sort of nothing specifically newsworthy per se, but it's an opinion piece. But there's been some criticism about a performance of Hedwig in, oh my gosh, where is it? I'll figure it out. But they hired a cis male person to play Hedwig, and the trans and non-binary community went a little crazy. But then John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask came in and said that technically Hedwig is not a trans character and that a cis character should be able to play it. And I have got to say here, I am so torn on this subject in general. I do believe that... that I understand that the character of Hedwig is not technically trans. Mm-hmm. They kind of became trans when they had a botched circumcision and kind of a forced gender change, but not particularly trans. So, but this goes to this whole thing about people being able to play their, you know, trans and non-binary actors being able to have roles to play. And for years and years and years, trans and non-binary actors were saying, great, you're a great actor, but there's just no roles. I won't hire you to play a cis character. And so along comes a character like Hedwig that can be played by a trans person. And I can see the trans and non-binary community being a little upset by it because this is an opportunity for them to do theater. And then they lose it to a cis character, which I also understand being able to do it. So I'm so torn.
What's interesting is that it's not new that John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask have come out to say that this is not a trans character. Like, this is something he's discussed from the very beginning. So it's not like... this is they just made that up to say it.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not talking about this show in particular. I'm talking about in general.
I know. I just wanted the listeners to know, like, this wasn't a rapid response. Like, this is something that he has said for decades regarding this. But yeah, I hear you. It is a weird, I can feel being torn about it.
But I will say this. I do think it's kind of unfair for the trans and non-binary community, of which I'm a member, to get really vocally upset about it or pissed off. But I can see how they can vocally be very disappointed.
I completely understand on being disappointed too. Yeah. That's a hard one, Lisa.
Yeah. So and that goes beyond trans and non-binary. I mean, for the longest time, mm-hmm. you know, gay and lesbian actors could, you know, wouldn't be given other roles. And at the same time, you can see all these iconic characters, especially in movies, played by non-gay stars playing gay characters. I mean, I think Jared Leto is an recent example in whatever that movie was about the AIDS pandemic.
Dallas
Buyers Group. Yeah. So I just thought I'd talk about that, and then it was more of an excuse to play Hedvig on the show.
I have no problem with that.
So you remember, several months ago, we talked about NBC that was going to do they were going to be doing recordings of Broadway shows on the air, and it didn't seem like anybody was going to do it. It was this big announcement and it just disappeared.
Yes.
Well, back. It's come back.
I know.
And it is back.
Excited about it.
Well, it's not quite what they originally said it was going to be. So they said they were going to be doing scenes from shows, and ostensibly they were going to be asking these Broadway shows to remount things at their own cost.
Because don't you just have everything waiting and in the closet just to go zip?
Exactly. But it's a little different now. This is going to be a special entitled One Night Only, The Best of Broadway. It's going to air December 10th at 8 o'clock. It's going to have performances from Ain't Too Proud, Chicago, Jagged Little Pill, Mean Girls, and one I'm kind of excited about. It's going to be so bad. It's going to be a hot mess. Diana.
Diana. You didn't say who was hosting this.
Oh, I didn't, did I? Tell folks who's hosting it.
It's one Tina Fey.
Tina Fey.
And I know you mentioned it was December 10th, and it's airing on NBC.
Correct. It says 8 p.m., but I'm guessing that's 8 p.m. Eastern, which means it's 7 p.m. for us.
You are correct, because I've sent the times to a few people already.
So listen to this lineup of stars. I'm just going to go through all of them that's in this article.
I'm so excited about this evening.
Yeah, which I pulled this article from Broadway News, and it doesn't say who wrote it, I don't get to give them credit. People in it: Kelly Clarkson, Brett Eldridge, Patti LaBelle, Annalee Ashford, Lance Bass, Kristen Bell, Ron Cephas Jones, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Peter Gallagher, the Grobster.
I know, Icebike, you haven't gotten to the Grobes.
Jake Gyllenhaal, Sean Hayes, Nathan Lane, Cameron Mannheim, Alanis Morissette, Jerry O'Connell, Leslie Odom Jr., Billy Porter, John Stamos, Aaron Tveit, Blair Underwood, Susan Kelechi Watson, and somebody that we're going to be speaking to later today, One Vanessa Williams.
I know. I'm like, zing.
So this is going to be something that's going to support Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, of which I don't know that we've mentioned this on this show before. I'm going to think we have, but it bears re-mentioning that one Nick Mayo of Nick Squared is I don't think he's the director of development. He's in the development department of Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. So love out to the Mayo-ster. So I'm very excited. Just by coincidence, I happened to be watching Netflix last night, and I chose a film. I cannot remember the name of it. Folks, you'll probably come right up with it, but it starred, who'd I say? Kate Winslet and Billy Crudup, who I just love.
I love him too. I don't like how he treated Mary Louise Parker in real life, but I find him a talented actor.
That's another story that I know nothing about. I don't think I want to know, because I love both of those people.
I know.
It also starred Kristen Wiig, and it's a movie by Robert Rodriguez. And I sat and watched, based on our interview with Graham Reynolds, I sat and watched the credits, and the music is by Graham Reynolds.
And of course it is. Why wouldn't it be?
So let's listen to our interview with Graham. Nicole, thank you so much for meeting me outside the Zoom machine.
I know. Well, you said we had somewhere exciting to travel, so I'm looking forward to this adventure.
Well, but that thing that I had invited you here for got canceled. But thanks for meeting me here anyway. But wait, do you hear that?
I do.
That music coming from inside the Zoom machine?
Something is calling to us, Lisa.
What the hell? Let's go on the Zoom machine and see what's going on. That's weird. This has never happened. Oh my God, Graham Reynolds. What are you doing inside our Zoom machine?
It's a good question, but here I am.
Well, good. Well,
exciting.
We're happy that you're here. It's been either a long time since you've been on the show or you just haven't been on the show before. So welcome back or welcome, one of the two.
Yeah, sometime between a very long time and forever.
Sometime between 12 years ago and now. That's it. But we're so happy to have you on. I mean, you are an icon of Austin music, of not only the general music scene, jazz and I'm going to say classical composition, but of theater. You're really attached to theater. I'm just going to start with thank you for all the really great work that you do with the theater companies here in town.
Well, I mean, I've always loved working with theater from back to high school, did a ton of theater stuff, did lighting design for a while and thought maybe I was a lighting designer.
I did not know about that. And you
That's
actually...
That's an interesting little fact, Graham. I didn't know that either.
Isn't your degree in like Latin studies or something like that?
Yeah, I studied Latin American history in college. I did more lighting design in theater and Latin American studies than I did music with the actual school during college. I played in bands and stuff like that during college, but after a couple semesters, I quit the music department.
So we'll have to get you over to Ground Floor Theater to design a show for us.
Oh, well, I love it.
Well, we're here to actually talk to you about a lot of things, but I'm really excited about your Texas mixtape that you've got going with Texas Performing Arts. We've missed the first one, but you have two more. Why don't you tell us about them?
What I did was just put together three shows that I would love to see right now. Shows that embrace that visceral quality you get from being in a room with live performers that... as much as Zoom and all these other the virtual things give us, they don't give us that quality.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. I've been preaching that for 8 months
now. Yeah, it's something Lisa and I
talk about a lot. So Gina Chavez is our next one. That's December 4th. She's amazing. And I've seen her play and we've interacted socially, but never worked together. I think she's the only one on the series that I haven't worked with.
So and it says in the piece, in the lead into this, it says Gina Chavez and special guest. Can you tell us who the special guest is?
That is still secret.
Oh, so, darn.
I know. Also, Gina put out that amazing album this year. And she's been involved in the Latin Grammys. So she's been wrapped up in that and all the excitement that comes with that. And so it's going to be a surprise. And, you know, this is a new venue with improvised music and players playing with people they don't normally work with. Mm-hmm. And so we're asking the audience to take that sort of risk with us, just like the artists are taking that risk of making those creative choices in the moment. And so that's part of the risk of like coming to see Gina, who you know is going to be amazing, and be surprised by the special guests.
One of the things that I love about this idea is you're purposely pairing people that either haven't worked with others or are worked with them very rarely. So that stretches and makes the performance even more immediate and energizing, I think. So I just love the idea of that.
Yeah, and exactly. And the last week, I think, is the most, put that all together most clearly. It's four people who mostly know each other, but have not really worked together, certainly not in this formation. And it's Beto Martinez, a guitarist from Grupo Fantasma, and Brownout, and Money Chicha. The last time Beto and I worked together was years ago. We did a reorchestration of Mozart's Requiem, and Beto played on Adrian's movement, the Adrian Quesada's movement that he reorchestrated. And then there is Andre Hayward, who's a trombonist that I've been working with quite a bit. And he played for years and years with Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. So just a top flight player. Orion Garcia from Peligrosa, the DJ collective. And when Orion and I work together, we get there early. He records a bit of my piano, chops it up into samples, puts beats to it, and then we improvise together, me improvising essentially with chopped up bits of my own playing. And so that, I think, is partly what he's going to do with Beto and Andre, and then the last person, Josh Baca. So Josh is an accordionist, and Los Tex-Maniacs Conjunto Ensemble from San Antonio is his main group, but he also works with Los Lobos and all sorts of national acts. And he's somebody that Adrian Quesada connected me with when I was looking for, we were building a sample library called MXTX that's coming out next year. And Josh is just crazy good at the accordion. And now what I've learned, instead of having him learn anything, I just play whatever I'm working on. I have him over to the studio behind plexiglass. I've got my mask on, and anything I've been working on, I play it for him. And the first time he hears it, he plays along to it, and he creates these amazing things. So he seems perfect for this. In the moment, making choices experience.
Love the idea. I have to say that one of the things that I find amazing about musicians, and I'm so in awe of musicians, is that ability to understand the language and to improvise. It boggles my mind because I can't even do that with a kazoo.
Well, you know, it's such a different thing. Like theater, at least scripted theater, like, the ability to take something that's written and make it sound fresh night after night after night, that to me is amazing. And I can't imagine it. Playing the same music in a repeated way and making it sound new and spontaneous that night after night is not something I feel capable of.
So it's great. It's like apples and oranges. I never really thought of it. It's two completely different disciplines, and both equally, it takes as much talent and energy to make something, the same thing, fresh every day as it is to create something in the moment. So thank you for that. I want to switch gears for just a second and talk about your nonprofit. And the work you're doing with that. I think it is amazing, some of the stuff you've done. And then what's happening, if anything, with that this year? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Golden Hornet is something that Peter Stupchinski and I started years and years ago as people were playing bands but wanted to be more composers and write things for music for people to read. And so it started as a totally just for ourselves thing. And then grew to serving other artists and other composers, and eventually became a nonprofit. Peter doesn't particularly like meetings, and so now he participates in some of the shows, but is not leading it anymore. Penny Brandt is our great managing director. And what we've been doing during COVID has changed surprisingly little, considering that putting on concerts is what we normally do. We have a young composer program, kids from 8 to 18. Typically every year they help co-produce and compose all the music for a concert that we do in the spring. So instead, what we're doing is it's all on Zoom, and they're recording an album together. They're composing and producing an album together instead of producing a concert. So something that we can do virtually. We had been working on this MXTX. It's a large scale collaboration with 50 plus artists from Mexico and Texas, and it's DJ producers and composers all working together. And it's a sample library, and it's an album, and ultimately it will be a concert. And half the contributors are from Mexico, half are from Texas. And that, because it's so, everything until the concert is recording based. We're recording half of it in Mexico, half of it here. We're able to move forward on that. And so that'll be coming out in the spring. So we've been able to continue most of what we do. We have a string quartet smackdown where we get composers from around the world. We get submissions of 4-minute string quartets. And pretty much every year we get submissions from China to Iran, to Brazil, to Canada, to Brooklyn, to Austin. And we narrow it down to 16 and set them up March Madness style. And somebody ends up winning, and we record all the quartets. So we get to really hear what's going on in the composition world globally in that one little concert.
Well, that's so cool. Awesome. You don't normally hear a quartet and smackdown in the same sentence. So thank you for that.
I love it.
I do too. Where can folks get information about Golden Hornet?
So just goldenhornet.org or just Google Golden Hornet. There's a crab apple tree with that name, and that's not us. But everything else about Golden Hornet is pretty much us. I don't think anyone else is using that name.
Great. Well, we only have a few more minutes left, but what I did want you do so much stuff, and every time that I've seen you perform, what I love about you as a performer is not only the quality of the performance and the music that you play, but the sense of humor that you bring to almost everything you do. So I just wanted to show my appreciation for that, because you are really fun to watch work.
Oh, that is very kind. You know, I grew up loving 20th century visual art and 20th century music. And, you know, I was born in the early 70s and absorbed a lot of that. But there, in so much of it, some of it very overtly, there was a lack of humor and also a lack of interest in the audience. And sometimes overtly, there was a romanticization of the true voice of the artist and finding your singular voice. And, you know, somebody like Rothko, where you're fine, or just Albers was an even better example. Just like painted squares for 25 years at the end of his life and straight line squares in different colors. And sort of this obsessive, very focused thing, which I admired plenty of that work, but decidedly did not want to do. And I was much more interested in this dialogue with the audience, and decided not to try to find my true voice, but instead have whatever conversation came along.
Well, that is great. I know that you have your own website. Can you tell folks what that website address is?
GrahamReynolds.com.
Awesome. And where can folks get information about Texas Mixtapes at Bass Concert Hall?
So Texas Performing Arts is the producer. So if you go to their website, it's got all the information and everything you need to know right there.
Which I believe is texasperformingarts.org.
Yes.
Well, I know that you're busy vandalizing our Zoom machine. So Nicole and I will leave you to it. And we really do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
Yes, thank you. We'll see you later.
Just love me that Graham Reynolds.
He does some good stuff. And I love that he is all over the map, intertwined, and all the different mediums. And yeah.
So let's take a break. And let's go out by listening to something from Mean Girls.
Let's.
It's a cautionary tale.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and
Nicole.
I love the pause. That was a great first half. So let's just jump right into the second half, shall we?
Let's do it.
So, chung chung.
What happened?
Well, you know, there was, before, with lead into the I'll bury the lead a little bit. There was an article about the producers of in the theater wing wanting concessions from reopening. And when I first saw the headline, and the headline in this is in BroadwayJournal.com, the headline says producers want union concessions before reopening, and my first instinct as a liberal progressive person is no. But then I thought, well, yes, of course, everybody's got to help out in this. So basically, they're just saying that they're going to need some help from the actors unions, the IA, the technicians unions. But here's the interesting thing. You probably heard this. New York City and company is saying that New York City won't rebound. The tourism in New York City won't rebound probably until 2024. I will tell our listeners that Nicole just mimicked, said it two and four with her fingers, as I was saying, 24. But the tourists... takes up 2/3 of the Broadway audience, which I think is a lower number than I was expecting. I would have thought it to be higher. So that actually makes me kind of happy.
Oh, no, not at all. Everybody, it's so weird. When you grow up in New York, you grow up going to the museum, to the ballet, to the theater, to sports.
Well, and yet the normal thing. The converse of that is that I lived in New York for 20 years and I was in the industry, and many of my friends, you know, we never went to Broadway shows and we didn't do those things.
Grow up and you're not in the theater, like that's what you do. True. Go to all these other things. It's just
anyway, one of the things that I didn't like about this, and I got sort of their panties in a twist, their knickers in a twist. They heard about this when Charlotte St. Martin, who is the head of the Drama League, said it publicly before talking to any of the unions. You would have think they'd be in conversations with all these unions before. So if that's indeed the case, then I think they have a right to be a little upset.
Yeah, that's not cool. How do you ask people to be fair, and then that's how you're not even like had a conversation at first?
Agree. So the other, the tangent to this is gong gong.
Gong gong. The listeners can't see this, but like you have like full on big microphone and like newspapers galore. You look like you are at like the news desk getting the wire.
I am at the news desk. This is so we've been talking a lot about this, about the ongoing battle between SAG-AFTRA and Equity around who represents who.
Who's going to write a musical on this?
I think so. Well, they settled. And I think they settled in a good way, actually. But in the New York Times, Michael Paulson's article, I just have to say this. We have a word that, and I'll show, I circled the word. It's right there, circled.
Oh,
anyway.
You did. You wrote notes, I think, too, right?
I did. Well, I always do. You just never see them, usually. So the first sentence on this is... two major entertainment industry unions had settled an internecine dispute over streaming theater. Internecine. I dare you to tell me what that means without looking it up.
It almost seems like it's like internal intertwining.
Very good. It's a conflict within a group and mutual destruction.
It sounds like it's an internal thing. Yeah. Okay.
So this is an agreement
I wore my smart hat today, Lisa.
You did. It's tentatively scheduled to last until the end of the year, the end of next year, December 31st, 2021. And it preserves SAG-AFTRA's historic jurisdiction, but gives some accommodations. So basically what they're saying is that Equity will maintain jurisdiction if it is a theater piece that is not made specifically for video, that it is not something that is shot out of sequence. So if you're doing a show and you shoot it out of sequence, that's SAG-AFTRA. So it's basically,
that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. I think they did a good job with this.
A perfect example would be Heidi Schreck's Constitution. What the Constitution means to me would be the Equity, because it was straight and not shot for film. However, American Utopia, Spike Lee shot it for film, even though it's a play. He shot that specifically for film.
Right, but I guess it would depend. We'd have to look at that, because it was shot in sequence, so it's not...
But it was shot for film with multiple cameras with a film director, not the director of the musical.
Right.
I think that would fall into the SAG-AFTRA. So now we have to find out.
Well, the good news is we don't have to get in the middle of that fight.
No, but I just want to know, my curious mind.
Yeah, my feeling is it would still maintain equity, but also both of those examples. Well, American Utopia anyway are pre-COVID. I mean, they shot.
Oh yeah, they shot it.
Pre-COVID.
They're just recently out and were different, so that's what was making me think of it.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about Be an Arts Hero. Just to let people know that it exists. Be an Arts Hero is the campaign to get our United States legislature to look at arts and help us financially and otherwise. And there is an open letter that people can sign.
Yes. And
at offstageonair.com will not only be a link to the main page of Be an Arts Hero, but also you can click a link that'll take you directly to sign the letter. Have you signed the letter?
I have signed the letter.
Me as well.
I was very excited about it. It's a bipartisan thing. This isn't about anything. This is just about supporting the arts.
Yep. Yep.
That's new, in case they were wondering.
True, true. Did you read about this Neil LaBute play that it's the audience comes to the play, but there are no live actors. Did you see it?
No. It
was in the New York Post. There'll be a link at offstageonair.com. And there's a picture of, I think the only 8 people are invited at a time. And they're sitting in a circle. And in the center of the circle is a little bucket. So that's the visual. The headline is Neil LaBute's new COVID-19 play has no live actors. This is in the New York Post, written by Johnny Olkosinski. And at first I said, yeah, I don't know. This is jumping the shark a little bit. But when you read on about what it is, so it's basically a two-person pre-recorded play that is ostensibly a podcast. But what makes it theater is the audience comes in and listens to it. There's some environmental things that happen. For instance, all the walls to the theater change color depending on who's talking. There is this bucket in the center that has water.
Like, what's the bucket?
It's got water dripping in it. And I'm going to see if there's a, I thought there was, yeah. So here is the, what's it called? Synopsis.
The general gist
is a husband played by Keelan Durrell Jones and a wife, Gia Krovatin, seem separately to discuss with another person whom we never hear from about the last several months of their lives, how the pandemic went from terrifying to novel to monotonous. The comments are relatable, and we assume they're speaking to a therapist. And then they say it like it's all of a sudden just seems like it's going to be this thing, but then all hell ensues, evidently.
It does sound a little interesting.
Yeah, it kind of seems interesting. It's short. I think it's 45 minutes, so which I think is really important in today's era is to keep things short.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that this pandemic has done, I think, more than anything else, is shorten our attention span.
It has. I agree.
But we're just agreeing
today. What is going on? It's like Freaky Friday, but it's Manic Monday.
Something's wrong. So the name of this is True Love Will Find You in the End.
Oh, I kind of like that.
All right. Speaking of true love, you know what I love?
You.
I love me. No, I love Charles Dickens.
You do love Charles Dickens.
I love Charles Dickens. You know who else loves Charles Dickens? Austin Playhouse loves Charles Dickens so much that they got 2 different offerings of or by Charles Dickens. And we spoke to Ev Lunning, Laura Tono Haddock, and Andrea Osborne about this kind of lecture theater piece about Dickens in Texas. So let's listen to that.
Let's.
Nicole, how are you?
I'm good, Lisa. How are you?
Good. Did you notice that I ran the Zoom machine through the car wash? It's nice and shiny.
I was just about to say it's all sparkly. Did you have somewhere special you wanted to go, or do you have someone
special you want to see?
You're all snazzed up.
It's kind of like a Harley Davidson. You know how they always are clean and the chrome is all beautiful? Same kind of thing. It's a Harley Zoom machine.
I like a Harley Zoom machine.
Okay, well, let's rev the Harley up and see where we're going.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to open the hatch.
Do it up.
Ah, we're finding ourselves at Austin Playhouse.
This is very exciting.
It is.
Playhouse.
We have artistic director, Laura Toner-Haddock. Hi, Laura. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Love having you. And actor extraordinaire, director extraordinaire, teacher extraordinaire, everything extraordinaire, Renaissance man, Mr. Ev Lunning. Hi, Ev.
Good morning. Please don't stop.
I never.
Some more extraordinary. It's always nice to have extraordinary before breakfast.
That's true. I am so excited to have you guys on because, as Nicole knows, my favorite writer is a certain person, newcomer on the scene, called Charles Dickens. And you guys are doing a whole thing about Charles Dickens. And this is the part that sort of mystifies me, how his writing relates to Texas.
Well, I mean, Charles Dickens in Texas, you can't think of one without the other, right, Lisa?
That's one would. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, certainly some of our politicians were pulled directly out of one of those novels.
Absolutely. It's kind of a performance lecture that Ev dreamed up, and he worked on it with a couple other folks, and he'll talk about them. They presented a kind of an early version at the Austin History Center Association, and he came to me with this idea and said, you know, would this be part of the Ghostlight season? And we were already set. The Ghostlight season is what Austin Playhouse is doing right now while we can't do live performances, so we're all virtual. And we were already set to do Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which Bernadette Nason does this one-woman version of. And so when I looked at this, he sent me the script, this lecture that he developed, and I thought it was just this perfect complement. And so now we have a whole Dickens December happening at Austin Playhouse.
A DD, as we call it. Ev, you created this with two other people. Tell us why, what brought it on, and
I'll give you the long story rather than the short version. Pamela Francesca Christian and I have been associated with the Neil Cochran House Museum on 29th Street and San Gabriel, and it's really an extraordinary place. It's an antebellum mansion which has been restored and excuse me, and preserved. And they have a lecture series, a Sunday afternoon lecture series that they call Modern Times. And, Francesca's mom is on the board of directors, so she has a close association with it. So years ago, we started participating, excuse me, in the, why my voice is
why
gone.
Don't you take a little break and have some water? You don't, it's not COVID, is it? Because I'll send an ambulance over.
No. In any event.
Okay. I'll figure out a time to cut in. So go ahead whenever you're ready.
Sure. So the first lecture that we did for the museum was about the Civil War, because the house itself had served as a hospital for Confederate soldiers during the course of the Civil War. And so our lecture was Cries of a Wounded Nation. And we did all kinds of letters. We could include Walt Whitman and Mark Twain from the period. So that was our first lecture. And we've done a lecture on the 1890s and Austin in the 1890s. See, usually the lectures are organized around a particular decade. And so we did 1890s, and then they asked her to do something on the 1918 flu pandemic, which allowed us to learn everything we needed to know about pandemics before this one happened. But then we also included Texas writer Catherine Ann Porter and her novella, Pale Horse, Pale Rider, which is a chronicle of her own experiences as part of that flu pandemic. And the last one we did was a lecture on Giant, comparing the scenes from the novel and scenes from the movie. So we've had interesting opportunities for research. So Francesca said, okay, next time let's do Dickens. And I thought to myself, Dickens in Texas, how can this be? However, as we went along, we found all kinds of interesting parallels. Among them, of course, Dickens on the Strand in Galveston, which they organized in 1976 as a fundraising effort to restore their Victorian mansions. And Dickens on the Strand, let's see, is going to occur this December, even in the pandemic. And they've spread it out all over town into different locations so that they can have proper social distancing. So yes, Dickens does belong in Texas.
Well, that's actually really amazing, Ev. Thank you so much. Oh, wait, we have somebody else that's joined us here in the Zoom machine, Andrea Osborne. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
And you're a performer in this piece, are you not?
Indeed, I am. Yes,
indeed,
I am.
Indeed, you are. Well, that's actually, it's a really great segue. It's good that you showed up just at this moment, because I wanted to talk about how it was going to be done, because it's half lecture, half dramatization. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Great. Mm-hmm. And you are joined by fellow thespians, Mark Puhay and Catherine Schroeder. And so tell us what characters you're playing, how it works.
Well, Ev has written this wonderful historical journey, which I knew nothing about until reading this. And so there's some dramatizations describing basically the similarities or can you help me out, Ev?
So with the period of time that the museum was interested in was in 1845 to 1855. And of course, that's the time when Texas joined the Union as a state and, of course, was involved in the conflict with Mexico. But we included Dombey and Son, Hard Times, and Little Dorrit, which are the three novels as part of this historical period. Andrea takes part in scenes from Dombey and Son and from, Little Dorrit, and also provides some of the commentary.
So the actors are primarily playing characters from Dickens.
Well, we kind of, I parceled out that some of us lecture sometimes, some of us are in scenes from the novel sometimes, and sometimes we just all chorus together.
Well, that's great. It's awesome. I'm looking so forward to seeing it. Andrea, what else? You said you weren't familiar with the subject. What have you learned? Give us one little tidbit of what you've learned through this process.
Well, the one thing I learned about, I have some neighbors who are from Victoria, Texas, and I mentioned the Bronte Library or the Bronte visit and the that happened in Victoria. She didn't know anything about it. So that was something I learned. And she said, oh yeah, we have a really great library. But she had no idea any of this.
This whole lecture, it's these really exciting, where Ev kind of found the themes that were resonant in Texas at the time and the themes that Dickens was writing about and wove them together. And then we have these performances, we're adding in some historical images from the time period. And so it's, you know, this is big, like, history geek stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's such a fun kind of compliment.
So that's all real fascinating. First of all, you know, when you think of Dickens, you just assume he was a feminist, wouldn't you? That was sarcasm.
Yeah.
That was total sarcasm, so I apologize. But you're going to read a little passage of this, aren't you, from the Bronte story?
Yes.
Great. Well, does it need to be set up at all, Ev?
Actually, no. It has a little title, The Curious Case of the Bronte Club, and we could start right there.
Great. Yeah. Let's listen to it. This is Andrea Osborne and Ev Lunning doing a piece from Charles Dickens' Home on the Range.
The Curious Case of the Bronte Club. Viola Case, a pioneer school teacher in Victoria, organized the Bronte Club, the oldest women's literary club in Texas, in 1855. Members collected 11 volumes of current literature, which were kept in a dry goods box under Mrs. Case's bed. On a certain day of each week, the books were taken out and distributed to the girls. This embryonic lending library was the beginning of the Bronte Library, the predecessor of the Victoria Public Library.
When the national movement for Federation of Women's Clubs began, the Bronte Club sent a delegate, held in Tyler, Texas in 1898. The club joined the National General Federation of Women's Clubs in 1899. During the Civil War, however, the club devoted more time to war relief and to literary study. The club was generally dormant until 1868, when the Cirrhosis Club was organized in New York City in protest against the all-male press club of New York City, which gave a banquet for the visiting Charles Dickens and invited no women. This event seems to have stirred up women's club spirit across the country.
Among the Bronte Club's civic projects was the sponsorship of a lecture by Eleanor Roosevelt in December 1940, in which a crowd of 2,500 attended. Mrs. Roosevelt subsequently wrote in her column My Day about her visit to Victoria and one of the oldest women's clubs in the country. The club continued to contribute both funds and books to its original civic work, the Victoria Public Library. As many of you well know, our beloved Neil Cochran House is only a short distance down the street from our local Texas Women's Federation Club.
Awesome. That's cool. That is great. That just piques my interest to want to go see it. I know it happens on December 4th at 7:30. Where can folks go get more information?
Our website, austinplayhouse.com, is a great place for information.
Great. And I know it's going to be live on the 4th. Will it live on after the 4th?
We're going to have it on the site through the weekend, so through midnight Sunday. So we'll have a live Q&A after the live lecture. So if people want to participate in that, it'd be great to... that's when that will be happening. But they can also catch it.
Wonderful. Well, there's nothing like seeing it live. And then the final thing I want to ask you, Laura, I know that you are doing Christmas Carol, Bernadette Nason's. What are the dates of that so people can look
for that? Christmas Carol will be 2 weeks later. It runs December 18th through the 21st. And that 21st is a Monday. We're going to...
Don't I know it?
Christmas week a little.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Thank you guys for joining us in the Zoom machine.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I am really looking forward to this one.
Very grateful.
I think it's going to be really great.
I'm tipping my hat to you with a pip, pip, pip.
Pip, pip, pip. Yay, pip, pip, pip. Cool.
Pip, pip right out back at you.
I am so excited about seeing this thing.
I know. Lisa, I was like, this is so up Lisa's alley. This is like her cup of tea.
Yeah. And yet I was very surprised to learn that I have not read the three books that they're talking about, but I've never heard of them.
Oh, no. I knew one of them. I didn't know. One of them I have read. One of them I haven't read. But I didn't know Eleanor Roosevelt went to Victoria, Texas.
Yeah, I told you. She stopped at my house first.
Yeah, but I didn't know that. You never told me that.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Switching gears and talking about books and literacy, I spoke last week about the Concord Theatricals Book Club of Sarah Rule's How to Transcend a Happy Marriage.
Yes.
The book club discussion itself happens on December 2nd, so just a few days from when this show airs. And I wanted to let folks know that I read it. I pulled it down from Concord Theatrical's website. They have a little e-reader, so I didn't have to wait for the book. I could read it right on my tablet. I tell you what, I do like Sarah Rule.
I do like Sarah Rule too. She's witty.
Well, I like her and I don't at times. Like, I did not like To Peter Pan on his 70th birthday. Didn't like that. But I liked the vibrator play. And Zach Theater did a wonderful rendition of it a few years back. But I like her theater. And it's a lot of her stuff has some sexual over and undertones. And this one, How to Transcend a Happy Marriage, is no different. But I would encourage folks to go to Concord Theatricals and join in. Join with me on the second to this book club. It's a fast read. It's not a really long play, and it's very easy to read. So it's called...
She writes, the way she writes is like right off the tip of the tongue.
Yeah, it's very Aaron Sorkin-y. It's like line, 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 line. But this one has moments of monologue by a character named George, who is a woman. So
I like that.
Yeah. It always comes around to Charles Dickens. One of the characters' names is Pip.
Is it really?
And in the original show, Marissa Tomei was in it, and Lena Hall was in it, and Lena Hall will be part of the book club discussion. Well, that about does it for our show this week. Thank y'all for joining us. Do all the things that we ask you to do. Wash your hands. This is airing on the day before Thanksgiving. Have a really great and safe Thanksgiving. I truly hope you did not travel, but if you did travel, I hope you took all the precautions that you needed to take and are continuing to take precautions, because we need to beat this thing.
Indeed.
We'll see you next week, folks. Bye.